Now, for this next lecture, we'll be discussing vision and how the many different sort of functions can be that insects have sort of used vision to be able to live and survive, and in this case of this robber fly taking out down this poor dragonfly, eat. So, just wanted to remind you again that there is a copyright regulation here. But the objectives of this particular lecture is to understand the functions that vision can serve for a variety of different insect groups. As you can tell from this damselfly staring back at us, it's probably looking out around at the world, looking for prey, looking for predators that might be chasing after it, looking for mates, and generally seeing the world in so many different ways. But what are the adaptations of the visual system to allow for all these different types of functions, which include detecting color and motion, and basically understanding the visual world? Now, insect vision in itself has many different functions, and the visual systems, as you could tell from the eye design lecture, is almost as diverse as the insects themselves. They can also detect various things that we as humans can't detect, which includes polarized light in the sky and on the water. They can see colors ranging from ultraviolet or UV light and then into the red spectrum. And some of them can actually sort of move around in the world and be able to detect, you know, moving objects and respond in a mere fraction of a second. But ultimately, the diversity of environments where insects live and the diversity of life histories are reflected in the eyes of the insects, really. You know, in terms of, you can always look at the entire insect and say, you know, all sorts of different diverse lifestyles. But the eyes and the visual system enable huge amounts of diversity there, too. But before we get into that, I do have to say that there are different aspects of vision itself that can be divided into specific functions. One of them is called polarization vision, detecting patterns of polarized light in the world, and I'll explain that in a little bit. There's also being able to detect motion, more or less back and forth motion. Imagine this grating moving back and forth. Of course, there's, you know, the ability to detect color and use color to be able to move through the environment. And of course, there's often, you know, the world is made up of various patterns. So how do these different patterns, you know, how do these actually reflect what's going on in the outside world? So the first thing we'll discuss in terms of function and insects is polarized light. So insects can detect polarized light, and it has to do with the specialization in the actual insect eye that allows this. But what are the sources outside that of polarized light in the first place? Well, one of them is reflected water surfaces. When you actually look at a pond or a lake, it can be reflecting polarized light. And certain insects, such as this noted nectid, or back swimmer, which is right now upside down, staring at its reflection clearly in the water, uses this to be able to find water. So it, you know, as this particular insect flies above water, it actually is flying right side up, not upside down like it is now. And it, as it's flying, it has photoreceptors located on the base underneath of its eye that can detect polarized light and be able to find it and plunk right down into that to be able to swim around in its natural habitat, which is usually ponds and streams, or slow-running streams. So another big thing is that polarized light patterns in the sky are used by ants and bees to navigate on cloudy days and to move through the environment, like this bee getting ready to take off. So what is polarized light? Well, light itself can move in numerous different directions, and what this image is indicating is how photons or light can move in all these different sort of wave directions. And you can see that it's kind of represented here of these different ways that it's moving. But a polarizer, what it does is it takes only the bit of light that only moves in one single direction, in one single wave direction along the electromagnetic spectrum. So this polarizer just filters out and gets only the waves that are moving up and down, as indicated by this arrow. Now, what happens in the sky itself, or what also happens as a reflect, I mean, in the sky, is that the sky scatters the sun's rays, resulting in a pattern of polarized light, with maximum polarization, which is 90 degrees to where the sun is located. So if you look at the entire sky in this particular little photo right here, and I believe the sun is somewhere over here, then you take a camera with a polarizing filter, one that detects where polarized light is happening. You see this dark band here. So if the sun's over here, this dark band, 90 degrees, is the area of maximum polarized light in the sky. So this band actually expands across the entire sky, which can be detected by ants and bees moving through the environment. Water also can reflect polarized light. So as the light hits the water and is reflected in a specific way, often it's reflected as polarized light. And ants and bees detect the stuff in the sky. Other freshwater scissors and other insects can detect the polarized light coming off water surfaces. But I'd recommend going to this website about polarized light and to better understand how exactly it can happen. But what insects do is something special. Is because of the actual structure of the photoreceptor, if you take a cross-section of the photoreceptors, and again, remember, each one of these sort of triangular areas represents an actual photoreceptor, and you see how the microvilli, or the areas where the amount of retina is, or the rhabdome, where the amount of photon-detecting pigment is concentrated right here in these different these villi, you can see that they're oriented in specific ways, in the closed rhabdome or in the open rhabdome. And a non-polarized light cartridge will have these little microvilli oriented sort of semi-randomly, they're facing in different directions, etc. This is where the polarized light detecting cartridge comes in, is pretty specialized. What these photoreceptors are is that individual photoreceptor cells have their microvilli oriented all in one direction, as you can see in this arrow, or in the other direction, as you can see in this arrow. So what you see is a perpendicular orientation of each of these microvilli, which means that you can these photoreceptors can detect polarized light moving in this direction, in this one direction arrow, or in this direction, this other direction arrow, acting as sort of semi-filters for looking or detecting only certain types of polarized light. And another key point is that in the case of the non-polarized light sort of omatidia or cartridge, the photoreceptors don't usually look just straight, I mean, are nice and straight like that. They are actually twisted. They kind of end up twisting around each other as they, you know, go down the cartridge. A big difference is that in the polarized light detector cartridge, the photoreceptors are straight. So you have these microvilli oriented in specific directions as well as straight photoreceptors. And that means that there's can be specializations in the eye in specific omatidia and cartridges where you can detect polarized light or just detect generalized light. And for numerous insects, the areas that are specialized for polarized light detection are located at the very top rim of the eye called the dorsal rim, or the dorsal rim area. And that particular area is specialized to be able to detect polarized light facing upward, or the sky. Or in the case of the noted nectid, or the back swimmer insect, to be able to face downward, which would be the ventral rim of the eye. Whereas the rest of the eye is generally composed of these non-polarized light detecting cartridges. So with this combination, even within a single eye, you can imagine that there's a separation of function of some areas being devoted to detecting polarized light and other areas being devoted to detecting other things, such as, for example, motion. So motion is a hugely important function for any organism, and particularly insects, because the world moves. They move, and therefore the world moves because they move, or outside objects are moving. And again, they need to deal with that and adapt to that sort of situation. So they're, to be able to deal with this, they have there are different types of motion detection. There's something called wide field motion detection. In this case, the entire field is moving. Like, imagine more or less all these trees. You're kind of rotating through this billabong or whatever it is, and you're seeing the world shift on the whole, which is in opposition to small field motion detection, which is where a single object is moving around in the world. The rest of the scene is pretty still, but this single object is moving around, and you can use your eye and track exactly where it's going. So, in addition to that, in particular in terms of the wide field motion, is that some of the best studied aspects of insect vision has been in the blowfly in particular, in terms of how the world moves around them and how insects can try to detect how the world is moving around them in terms of the wide field motion stimulus. So, for example, if an insect is moving forward, what happens is the world is sort of going, to either side of it. You know, those screensavers where you look like you're careening through space, it's the same idea. It's as if the world is moving, to either side of you, and it's called translation or forward movement. And when you then map the direction of motion happening on the eye itself, as you can see in this close-up view of a blowfly head, you can see that the motion would generally be to either side and backward. This is in opposition to rotation, or something called yaw, or sometimes called sideward slip for other reasons, where you can imagine, as you're rotating through the world, the whole world is moving in one single direction. And again, the eyes would experience motion in a general trended direction, all in the same way. Now, there's also something called roll, where you're actually rotating around, and not many humans do this very often, unless you're doing cartwheels, but you rotate the world around them. But insects can often do this, and you see the world sort of rotating around the head, such as in this direction, which you can imagine would be going around there. Now, of course, there's also pitch, which can be up or down type motion, where the world either pitches down or up, depending on if the insect goes up and down. And this kind of motion can actually produce different types of up or down motion across the eye. So there's these different types of wide field movement detection, which in the nervous system itself of the insect, particularly in blowflies, we know that there are specific brain cells that allow detection of these different types of motion and separate them out, which is, which we'll be addressing in a later lecture on the nervous system. But with regard to motion, insects need to be able to deal with this, and these are the types of stimuli and functions that they have to deal with in case, for example, they're blown by a bit of wind, or they're moved around, or if they're moving forward, etc. Now, there's also the idea of small field tracking, particularly in the case of dragonflies. This has to do with tracking small objects in the world, such as this little tiny ball and moving forward. Now, some of the best and some of the most amazing systems in terms of tracking in terms of insects or even any system are dragonflies. They can detect minute gnats flying through the air and sweep them out of the air. In fact, even on the UQ campus in the evening, you can look up and these small gnats are being pretty much attacked nonstop by these dragonflies. And it's absolutely essential for these insects to be able to hunt prey. And they have really nice fine resolution to be able to detect that. But not only that, but they're able to predict the path of their prey based on their trajectory. And what I'd recommend doing is going to Professor Robert Olberg's website over in New York. It's listed right here. And check out some of the images where the dragonfly sees a little ball, a little tiny pebble. It moves across, and you can see it making these amazing turns and trying to, do these amazing acrobatics using a high-speed camera, how the dragonfly is able to predict what is going on out there. And there's some pretty amazing research to try to address how dragonflies could do that. Now, we have motion, and that's a pretty amazing tool, and that's there are numerous functions for it, and of course, understanding how the world is moving around you, as well as target tracking. But insects can also do something called color processing, more or less just detect different colors in the environment and distinguish them. But a big thing is that light itself is divided into many different wavelengths. There's the visible light spectrum, which is the human visible light spectrum, which are wavelengths ranging from 400 nanometers to 600 nanometers, thereabouts. And then there's some light that can be detected by insects, generally ultraviolet light, which many, obviously humans can't detect. But many insects, including bees and flies, and there's a huge range, can detect wavelengths from 320 nanometers to 550 nanometers. That means that they aren't so strong in detecting red wavelengths, generally. But they can detect, from green to UV. And that's an important distinction, because it means that for most insects, or at least a good number of insects, the colorful world that we perceive is a completely different experience to what, how insects actually can detect it. Of course, there's also even some butterflies that can detect wavelengths from 320 nanometers to 650 nanometers. That means that they can see all the way from UV to red color ranges. And then finally, using a type of mechanosensory type organ, which, I'll look up some of the possible websites, but there are certain fire beetles that can detect infrared light or infrared wavelengths. And that's far into a range that we as humans can't detect. But what I would recommend going to is this particular website, photographyoftheinvisibleworld.blogspot.com. And it's a pretty it's an impressive website, because this individual took a series of photos using filters that allow UV light in, as well as other filters that allow us to better understand how insects might be perceiving the outside world. And they have a series of photos of how flowers, which we would think are just all the same color, are completely different when you take into account UV and various other wavelengths. So how can photoreceptor detection, how can color detection work? Well, to be able to detect color cues, you have to compare signals from different color channels. Imagine if you had a photoreceptor type or a type of photoreceptor that can detect light across this entire range as either light on or off. That means that you can't distinguish ultraviolet light from red light. It means, ultimately, that you can't be able to determine whether one color is different than the other. Now, to be able to deal with that is most systems have developed different types of photoreceptors. If you remember from the eye design lecture, there are photopigments or various other types of retinol, which allows the detection of photons and then the processing, which can excite the photoreceptor. Well, it's not as simple as that. There's also different types of photopigments, which, when they are hit by photons, they can be excited depending on the wavelength of the photon. So certain photopigments can be excited by UV light, other ones by yellow light, other ones by red, etc. And so you can have different types of photopigments and proteins that can pick up each of these different types of wavelengths, which means that if you wanted to say that UV is different from red, you should have, it's probably best to have one set of photoreceptors with certain photopigments that can detect UV, and other ones that with different photopigments that can detect red, and be able to compare the signals to say that that color is UV or that color is red. So, in this same way, many insects have different types of photoreceptors, which can detect different certain wavelengths, or have different sensitivities for different types of light, which is distributed in different regions of the eye. So, for example, certain photoreceptors are UV sensitive, other ones are blue or green. And many insects have something called a dichromatic eye, where they have two different photoreceptor types, often blue and green, which means that they can tell blue and green, but they can't really see or detect or distinguish a lot of these other colors outside of that range. And they're called dichromats. There are many insects, including various other insects, that have three different types of photoreceptors or color channels. They're called trichromatic insects, and they can detect the range from UV to green. Some butterflies and odonata are pentachromatic in that they have five different types of photoreceptors, which can separate, tons of color from all the way ranging from UV all the way into red, which means their world is a completely different experience to ours because they can distinguish colors that we just could not. Because, for example, we can only detect a certain small range. So, within this sort of purview, you can imagine that color processing can get pretty darn complicated. But it does allow insects to then be able to detect color, motion, and pattern, and be able to eventually be able to use that to detect, in the case of bees, different types of flowers. Or, detect a tree and distinguish it from a branch, or distinguish it from landmarks, etc. So many foraging insects use pattern cues, which also involves color and motion, to remember flowers and flower patterns. And it's also pretty darn important to navigate the world. If you need to know where your tree is relative to your nest, that's how they use it. Various researchers, such as Srinivasan, Heisenberg, Venner, and many, many researchers, studied how bees and ants can learn to associate sugar wort with patterns. So the big thing is, if you want to train an insect, you want to be able to train it to associate a particular thing, like a pattern, with a reward, like sugar. And so what various researchers have done, including Madame Srinivasan here at the Queensland Brain Institute, as well as various other researchers, is to figure out how insects can able to see these patterns and distinguish them. And have found various amazing ways that they can use these different oriented patterns to distinguish and learn how to navigate the world. And I'd recommend looking up this article or many of these researchers to see, okay, how do we understand how these creatures learn? But ultimately, the big question is, how do you navigate this complex world when you're an insect? And how can you use, the complex visual world when you're an insect? Ultimately, you use everything. You use polarized light coming from the sky or coming off reflective surfaces. You use color to be able to detect, oh, there's flowers, there's maybe a fly over here, etc. You use wide field motion detection to see that you're going to be going through a series of trees and the world's going to be passing you by. Then you use small field motion to detect, oh, there's a runner over there, there's etc. going on. And ultimately, there's pattern vision, which kind of brings a lot of this together, meaning that insects have evolved so many different ways to detect all of these aspects of the visual world to be able to live and survive dealing with the complexities of their environment. Thank you.